Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, congratulations, Washington Nationals. First ever World Series appearance. A dominating fashion over the St. Louis Cardinals. They win 7-4. All seven runs in the first inning, all they needed. And they will wait and sit and wait as the Astros and the Yankees hash out the American League Championship Series. They'll have game four tonight in the Bronx. The Astros win, good luck, Yankees. If the Yankees win, it might be a little bit of a game on. Who knows? But nevertheless, the Astros win 4-1 in game three, getting a performance from Gerrit Cole that wasn't one of his best, but it was certainly good enough. He went seven scoreless. Yankees had runners on base, left them stranded. So this series could change today based on weather. If it rains and it gets extended into Thursday, now we have a different set of rotations for both teams. We'll see. In the NFL, there is an era that is coming to an end. Here in Nashville, Marcus Mariota is being benched for Ryan Tannehill. Now, Mariota can get his job back. He can certainly come back to form. But there is a belief that it's over, that his second overall pick in the 2015 draft, that while it was an up and down type of career, a couple of playoff appearances, a playoff win, it never turned into the superstar level the Titan fans had hoped. Back when they went and had the number two overall pick, Jameis Winston going number one, of course, there was a lot of belief that the Titans were going to trade that pick and pick up a lot of different pieces that they were needing. They had Zach Mettenberger, remember him? And he was young, and he was from LSU, and showed some promise in a 2014 season. But still, there was this feeling like, well, maybe they will get one of these two quarterbacks, and maybe that quarterback will become a star and take the league by storm and take this franchise to the next place. You can make all the excuses you want for Mariota. He's had a number of different head coaches, a number of different offensive coordinators, but in reality, he never took the team. He never elevated the team. They were a pretty bad team, mediocre team before he got there, and they ended up being a pretty mediocre team after that. The worst you can be in the NFL is 8-8 because your draft pick is in the middle. You don't make the playoffs. There were a lot of years where the Titans were just blah. They just weren't exciting. And Mariota was at the helm of it all. And I think that's it for Marcus Mariota in Nashville.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, if you just joined us, we are playing the music of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees that was announced. These are first-time nominees.
Your comments were funny. You know the hardest part about this one was? I didn't know what song to choose for her.
Oh, I know. This is Pat Benatar.
Yeah.
Which I can't believe. Again, I can't believe she's not in either. Are they just starting over? Just like, no. Let's get everybody out and let's redo this whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, restarting from the beginning. How is Pat Benatar again? The same thing. How is Pat Benatar not in this already? What are you talking about? First time nominee. She was fantastic.
She was rock. I mean, like, you think of like rock and roll chicks.
Yeah,
and I'm using the word
her and, like,
chick.
Joan Jett, right? Like, they kind of dominated the 80s, yeah. Right?
You know, Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks. Of
well,
course.
I mean, that was last year. Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks got in last year.
She got in last year.
Right.
But I mean, I know women don't like the term chicks, but this was. I mean, she personified a rock and roll chick.
Right. Completely.
I mean, and not. It's not a negative way. The hardest thing I had was trying to figure out, do I go with Hit Me With Your Best Shot? This was her breakout hit. So I was like, you know what? I got to go with the breakout hit.
I had an English teacher in high school named Mrs. Wood, and she looked just like Pat Benatar.
Oh.
I'm not,
that's not bad.
Yeah. No, it's not bad at all.
No, that could be kind of dangerous, if you know what I mean.
Right, no kidding. Absolutely. We all kind of had a secret crush on her because she was like that 80s hot, mm-hmm. you know? You know what you find out when you get older? And I was like 13, 14 years old, right?
Yep.
And you don't realize how young your teacher is until you get to that age and then you bypass it and then you pass it and you look back. Like she was like a couple of years out of college. She was like 23 years old, right? She was about 10 years older than us. You know, like, and you don't realize how young they are until you kind of look back and you're like, that was a young lady out of college. And she's, you know, looking like Pat Benatar in the 1980s. She was really, really cute. But I didn't understand all of that as a young man. I was just trying to make sure I got my, my dangling prepositions taken care of, whatever it was in my essay. But she really, she looked just like Pat Benatar. In fact, she even mentioned that a few times. So, nevertheless.
Maybe she
was cool. She was cool, too. You know the word adamant?
Yeah.
If you break it down, you also get Adam Ant.
Yep.
And she had a question on a test about adamant, and one of the multiple choice was rock and roll singer or singer of the song. And that was a secondary option for you if you wanted to choose that for fun.
No, you know what? No, she was Pat Benatar.
Yeah, I think she was.
She was.
I think she was secretly Pat Benatar, yep. Working in the middle of nowhere, New Hampshire.
Just, you know, by day, teaching English, by night, rock and roll legend.
Right. I went, real quick though, I went to another, before I moved to this other town in New Hampshire, which was right across the way, wasn't that far, I went to this other high school, and this is really interesting. I was part of a group of 7th graders, because this high school had 7 through 12, and I was part of a group of 7th graders where the senior group used to pick on us all the time. And there were kids on my bus and there were other groups. And they used to pick on me and my friends a lot. And then years later, I go to this other high school. And who is my English teacher my senior year? One of the girls from that group, from that high school that used to pick on me when I was seventh grade. And I always reminded her of that all through my senior year. I said, I think you put me in a locker one time when I was a nerdy seventh grade kid. And now she's grading papers, making sure I get to college. So that was now I'm having high school flashbacks, Ron. Thanks, because Pat Benatar should have been in the Hall of Fame, and I shouldn't have to be going through this at all.
No, that's all right.
That's right.
It's good to relive the pain.
So speaking of flashbacks, what do you think Bryce Harper is thinking about this day, the next day, all next week? Do you think he regrets, or do you think he says, I'm taking Philadelphia to what that is right
there?
He's
sitting back going, congratulations, Nationals!
To all my friends over in Washington?
I don't know about that.
Or do you think he's talking to his wife going, oh my God, if they had just ponied up the money, I could be doing this.
Yep. 1 year away. I mean, but the thing is, they didn't really pony up any money this season.
No, they didn't.
You know,
remember, too, Tom Boswell had a great, great line about this. About the Nationals going to the World Series. Tom Boswell, the Washington Post. He said, it's like going in your backyard, digging for petunias, and striking oil. It just is an anticipated gift that the Nationals have given the D.C. area and their fan base. No Bryce Harper, 12 games below 500. You're like, oh, well, where's this going? Now they're going to the World Series. And look, think about being a Nationals fan at the beginning of this season, right? Or, you know, better yet, be a Nationals fan around May when the bullpen couldn't win games. You lost Bryce Harper to free agency, right? You still had Scherzer and Strasburg, right? You still had pitchers. But you lost a once-in-a-generational player. How many baseball players at the age of 19 or 20 are capable of handling the pressures and daily grind of producing at the major league level? Well, guess what? They have one in Juan Soto. He doesn't turn 21 until like game 3. They've got another one. But losing Bryce Harper hurts. He was a generational player. He was ready for the majors right out of high school. And you don't get that a lot. He was ready for the stage. He was ready for the show. And remember, Ron, we are 15 months away, removed from Bryce Harper screaming, hollering, and jumping up and down at Nationals Park winning the Home Run Derby. That's not that long ago.
Nope.
And in 15 months, He went from that moment in his park wearing the Nationals uniform, winning the home run derby, to an excited crowd that was pulling for him, to being at home in Philadelphia, wherever they live now, watching his former team play their way into the World Series in dominating fashion without him. And that to me is why sports is a very unpredictable business. Because you could have made a lot of money if you had bet the Nationals to make it to the World Series back in May. Exactly, they didn't have any supporters.
I mean, were the 12 games below 500 on May 23rd?
May 23rd, just before, about a week before Memorial, well, around Memorial Day.
Yeah, around Memorial Day, there were 12 games below 500. At that time, you thought, okay, you know what? The Nationals really missed Bryce Harper.
Right, exactly.
They really, you know, they should have ponied up the money. I'm certain there were fans who were livid at the Nationals saying, why didn't we pay for Bryce Harper?
Especially
we needed that bat in the lineup.
Especially at that point. There were rumors that they were going to trade Scherzer. There was rumors that the manager was going to get fired, right? They were going to dump it all, right? Start all over. They got Juan Soto. Let's build around him. Let's dump it all. Let's get rid of these big money contracts as best we possibly can, and let's start from scratch again. But unfortunately, we got Soto, but what are the odds we're going to land another 19-year-old ready for the majors kind of superstar that we got in Harper?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Cleveland Indians in Major League.
Yeah.
Where
yeah,
all of a sudden they decided, you know, they were down in the dumps. No one's attending. People are upset. And then they decided to turn around. I'm certain that the owner of the Nationals didn't threaten to move them. But
right. Didn't threaten to move them. And so they started taking away pieces of clothing.
Yeah. They probably didn't go there. But they probably sat back and said, you know, let's make this season our season.
Right.
Let's turn this ship around and let's make something happen.
But what they did, which was really brilliant in a way, even though it looked like it wasn't really paying off at the beginning of the season, was, okay, we're not going to pay Bryce a lot of money, but we are going to commit money to Scherzer, and we're going to commit money to Corbin, and we're going to extend Steven Strasburg's contract, because you do win in this league with pitching.
Yeah, and we're going to throw a little, and then on the flip side too, you know, honor those who have stuck around. We're going to throw a little cash towards Anthony Rendon.
That's right. Right.
Because he's going to be the cornerstone for them. You know, real quick, who I'm most excited for making it to the World Series is Ryan Zimmerman.
Ryan Zimmerman. I didn't know he was their first ever draft pick until last night.
That didn't seem right to me. And when
they didn't either.
When they were talking to him, I was like, oh, is he a bench coach now?
Yeah, right. Yeah, like if you had told me he played for like the Angels and then they got traded when the Nationals were formed, I wouldn't have been shy. I didn't know that he was their draft pick. That's a great feeling. But you know what, though? Look. You know, it is hard when you leave a bit. I don't care what job you're in. If you're not leaving because they want you out or you're angry with them or whatever, you're just leaving for what you think is a better opportunity for your family. There's got to be a little bit of pain for Bryce Harper to watch. These are the people he went to battle with in every day. And those fans, they loved him. They loved him until they didn't love him anymore. And if he was watching last night, I don't know if he was, he must have felt his heart go a little bit like, man, I wanted that so bad for that city. What they're doing right now, I wanted that so bad. I'm now in a city where they sort of expect championships, even though their last one has been, you know, was 2008. I'm not getting that, which is the first ever World Series for the franchise and the first one for the city of D.C. or the district of D.C. for, 80-something years since the 30s? To me, it's got to be painful to see that play out. It really does. And I feel a little bad for him, but not too bad. There's like 300 million reasons why I don't feel bad. But nevertheless. All right, what was it like in China at the time Daryl Morey tweeted? There is an account of this. Does it make you think of LeBron James and the rest of the NBA guys a little differently in how they responded to this? Well, we'll give you details, and we'll tell you what we think next on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Whitney Houston is a first-time nominee for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That does make sense. That's
cool. This one you can kind of get behind.
Yeah, exactly. The incomparable Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
A 1 out of 4 batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly is the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, so we talked about LeBron James's comments yesterday about Daryl Morey's tweet and that he didn't think Daryl Morey was educated on the issue. And now there is an interesting article at ESPN.com. Dave McMenamin has wrote kind of an inside look of what it was like for the players and the teams that were in China at the time. The Lakers, for example, flew to Shanghai. They did not know to, they did not know about the tweet when they got on the plane. The plane didn't have any Wi-Fi. When they landed, all hell was breaking loose. So this is set up as an article to kind of give you an inside look at what some of the players had dealt with and were dealing with while in the country of China at the time Daryl Morey sent out his Free Hong Kong tweet. The teams were staying at the Ritz-Carlton in Shanghai, and the way the article presents it is this. It was difficult for them to notice anything other than the 30-foot banners of their likenesses being stripped off the side of a shopping mall across the street. With the team set to play the first of 2 scheduled exhibition games the next day, no explanation available as to why the promotional posters were being taken down. A state of confusion, even fear, enveloped the room, sources present in China last week told ESPN. Now imagine that. I have a little sympathy for them on this. I do. They're in a communist country. They're in a dictatorial country. And they notice that, okay, there is banners being taken down and we are here to play basketball. What's happening? Are we safe here? Can we get out of here? What's going to happen to us? Why is this happening? They don't know. And then they start realizing, oh no, there's this tweet. There's about the protesters in Hong Kong. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of business opportunities that's getting taken away from them. They had been told, a number of players had been told, especially with Team USA when they traveled to China for the World Cup, about the country, about some of the expectations within the country. And they were warned about some of, you know, what China's government was. And so if you were on that team or part of that team, and you are in this situation where banners are getting taken down and you realize, oh, God, they don't like us anymore. What would go through your mind? Now, that's not to say that I think LeBron's explanation of this when he got safely back to the United States and talked about this on Monday was appropriate. I still think he needed to word this better because his overall, even though he backtracked it, on Twitter, his overall message was that Daryl Morey didn't know enough about the situation to comment on it. But LeBron was looking at it from this perspective of all of the things he witnessed while he was there. And what he saw was an NBA Cares event getting canceled, business deals getting canceled, Nike was losing opportunities, other players had business meetings set up while they were in China for promotional events. One particular player had a $1 million deal to be part of this one promotion, and that got stripped away the second they landed. James had gone to China for 15 straight summers, and instead, this summer, he was filming Space Jam 2, but he had deals for both Nike and Beats by Dre, and they were both canceled immediately on this trip as well. So it wasn't just that the NBA was getting a lot of flack for this. All the players' deals were getting stripped away. So, look. Is it about dollars? Of course it's about dollars. But that's where LeBron was coming from. Like, Morey didn't understand all of these ramifications that all of these players were put into when they got there, whether it's for their safety, whether it was for their economic betterment. All of this stuff, Daryl Morey wasn't educated. But that's not what he really was presenting. He didn't say that. He didn't word that right. He didn't say that he didn't understand what the players were going through. He said Daryl Morey was uneducated on the issue. And if he meant the issue of the players, well, then he's missing the point as well. But do you know what I've noticed about this, Ron? This is an absolutely 100% unwinnable position for the NBA and its players. They are losing fans in China, and they're going to lose fans here. There is no side that's on this. If you're on the left, you want them to speak out. If you're on the right, you want them to speak out. You might have a different degree of how much you want them to speak out based on your political leanings. But nobody has the sympathy for these players because they lost million-dollar deals because Daryl Morey tweeted about a country that is fighting for its freedom. That's just an unwinnable position for the players to be in. And it is tough when you're LeBron James and you want to be taken seriously. He does want to be taken seriously as an athlete that's more than an athlete. He wants to take that next level. A lot of athletes don't want to take that next level. Do you remember in the mid-90s when Tiger Woods' father had that had those comments in Sports Illustrated talking about his then, 20-year-old son?
Yes.
Said he was going to be the next Messiah.
Yep.
He was gonna bring world peace, or he was gonna bridge the gap of nations. He envisioned his son's ability to play golf on a world stage as an access point to changing the planet. And Tiger said, "Nah, I don't want to do that. I want to play some golf, and I'm good." Michael Jordan famously said, "Republicans buy sneakers too," right? A lot of athletes don't want to use themselves in social causes. Muhammad Ali got a lot of flack for doing that himself when he refused to go to the Vietnam War. Brian Gumbel said it best, that if you went back in time and you said to many people in the 60s and 70s that Muhammad Ali in the 1996 Olympics, shaking with Parkinson's and holding the torch, he would be a beloved figure around the globe from everybody that would look at him fondly. You would have won a ton of bets. You would have won a ton of bets because he wasn't looked fondly. He was very polarizing. He stood his ground and he did a stand. Jim Brown did the same thing on certain issues. LeBron wanted to be this person. He still wants to be this person. Now, listen, it doesn't mean that LeBron has to speak on everything. That's what drives me crazy about this, right? You know, I listened to Kendrick Perkins yesterday on The Jump say that he was upset with Daryl Morey because Morey wasn't commenting on all these other things that were going on in the state of Texas. But at what point do you just go, no, these are the things I want to talk about, and these are the things I don't want to talk about, and it's okay because I'm a human being, and some issues mean more to me than others. And I don't want to comment on the border, and I don't want to comment on universal health care, and I don't want to comment on maybe a police shooting that happened in a city in another part of the state. But on this, I want to comment on. And that's okay. We all have that right to do that. And James certainly can do that. But here's the rub. Here's the rub. James is being seen as the ultimate capitalist. So it makes any time he does speak out, you wonder, well, he doesn't have anything politically or economically to gain with this. So now he feels okay to comment. And that's going to be the caveat every time James speaks out on anything. Is there always going to be, well, I guess there's no economic angle for LeBron James. He didn't want to come out and defend a country's right to freedom because it hurt his bottom line. But on this, it doesn't hurt his bottom line, so now he's free to criticize whatever he wants to criticize. Steve Kerr learned that lesson too. Kerr really blew it. I was really disappointed in Kerr. Because there are things I agree with politically with Steve Kerr, but there's a lot of things I go, man, come on. You're playing to a crowd, right? When Kerr spoke out on this and then went right into this country's gun problem and whatnot, that was a safe place he felt like he could go. Right? Well, I got half the country on my side, so I'll win them over by throwing gun control in the argument. I'll get off this train that I'm uncomfortable on, but I'll go to where I'm safe, where 50% of the population will tell me how awesome I am for speaking truth. That was weak. Look, if you guys don't want to comment on this, don't comment on this. I get it. But at the same time, we are seeing this for what it has always been. It's about money. And even I read this article and I did go, wow, that must have been a surreal experience. You're on this plane for 14 and a half hours. You're leaving LAX. You're in the air. You know you're going to a very, very safe place, even though it's a communist country. It's a dictatorial country because you're extremely popular, hundreds of millions of fans. So you're going to be treated like gods. And you know this is going to be a fun time because there is an absolutely crazy level of energy for this. And then you land and everyone's taking your images off posters and everybody wants to sand down sponsors on the court and everybody is mad at your organization and your team and your league and Daryl Morey and the Rockets and all of that. It must have been absolutely surreal and scary. But I still view this as it was dollars and dollars and dollars, and that really was it.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb for a Wednesday hump day. Let's get the good.
The good of the day is it's a good one because it will be good now, and it's going to be good probably a couple of weeks from now.
It might
be one of the first goods that makes a return to good.
All right, what do we got?
There's a new tell-all book that will be hitting the shelves in the near future about Tiger Woods, written by Tiger Woods.
Excellent.
So that's
he's
got
to be really honest, though.
Yes. No, that's the only way it's going to be good. If not, it quickly will go to bad.
I heard he took a little shot at, like, Armin Katayan wrote a really good book about Tiger, and he took kind of a shot saying, this is the real story.
Yeah.
No, it better be the real story.
This is a book that's full cooperation of his friends, family, and inner circle. Woods said, I've been in the spotlight for a long time, and because of that, there have been books and articles and TV shows about me, most filled with errors, speculative, and wrong. This book is my definitive story. It's in my words and expresses my thoughts, describes how I feel and what's happening in my life. I've been working at it steadily, and I'm looking forward to continuing that process and creating a book that people will want to read.
I want to read it. I kind of am fascinated by his life.
And it's titled Back.
All right. I'm fascinated by this. You know,
but he has to go no holds barred.
Do you know how many times I've seen this young baseball player or this young golfer or tennis player, and then we never hear from him again?
Oh, of course.
People watched That's Incredible and saw a 5-year-old Tiger Woods with Fran Tarkenton. He was on the Mike Douglas show, and he turned out to be exactly what people said he was going to be.
Yep.
I mean, he became the best golfer on the planet, a dominating presence, one of the greatest all time. And that's what everybody in the early 80s was saying when he was a toddler swinging a golf club on TV.
I'll even take it this far. Not even just the best golfer on the planet, but one of the best athletes on the planet.
Yeah,
the most
exactly.
Recognizable. I mean, I think at one point, only Muhammad Ali would have been a more recognizable athlete than Tiger Woods.
I think you might be right. Exactly. He took golf to another place. I mean, people started playing the game. There were courses being built all over the place with housing communities because people couldn't get enough of the sport, right? Kids were signing up for it because it was cool.
One of the most popular video games that ever came out. Couldn't wait for each edition of Tiger Woods Golf.
Exactly. So I want to know his life because growing up in that spotlight where everybody is talking, I mean, what was he like in high school when everybody was like, well, you're going to be a golfer. You're going to be like a PGA Tour golfer.
He already knew at that point. I mean, he was primed. I mean, you know, the fact that he went to college, he was probably someone who never even needed to go to college.
Oh, he didn't need to go to college. He could have rocked right onto the tour.
Yeah, could have started, you know, being professional right at 17, 18 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm kind of fascinated by that. I'm kind of interested. Plus his dad and all that.
But he can't hold back because we need to know what happened in, what was it, 2008, 2009?
Yeah, 2009. Don't give us that Ellen saved my life garbage by taking a 7-iron and cracking the window so she could drag me to safety.
Because your life wasn't saved. You went through, you went down. You went deep into a hole.
Yes, I want to know about it.
I want to know all of it, and I want to know the details leading up to it.
And also, too, like Hank Haney wrote a book where he kind of talked about Tiger's, you know, rudeness at times, and he was very unsympathetic at certain issues. Mm-hmm. I want Tiger's version of a couple of these things.
What I'm hoping for, too, is I want full disclosure. I mean, did you literally feel like a god because you were able to act like a god prior to, you know, that fateful night?
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, I want to know, like, did you walk into any place you went and like, yeah, I'll take her and her, come with me?
Yep, and did it all while his wife was back home with the kids and was raising his children.
Gotta know.
Gotta know. There's one other thing I want to know, just as a sort of curiosity, gossipy kind of celebrity thing. I'm interested in really knowing the relationship he had with Phil Mickelson in the early days.
Right.
Because I heard they really did not like each other. And as you get older and you get more, you know, you become more friends.
Now they, you know, understand each other.
Yeah, you understand each other better. But I guess at the rise of his power, Phil – had some problems with him. He had problems with Phil. Phil, one time in an interview, criticized Tiger's equipment. You know, it was made by Nike at the time. And Phil said, yeah, Tiger's upset I hit it past him because he has inferior equipment. He took a shot at Nike. And Tiger was very ticked off by that. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing all of this stuff play out in a book. That'd be cool.
But Tiger, I'm warning you, if you hold back, if it's just cupcakes and flowers,
that's right.
You're going straight to the bad.
Nope, it's
may
right
not even
to the
get
bad.
A mention.
So what is the bad here on a Wednesday?
The bad on a Wednesday is that there was a huge upset last night in sports.
All right.
I'm sure you were watching. I'm sure the whole world was paying attention to.
Oh, when, I know what you're going to talk about.
When the U.S. men's national team lost to Canada for the first time since 1985.
All right. I want to know, big deal, little deal, or no deal. It's a bad, but is it just one of those matches like, whoops, oops, they got problems?
Basically, this is what it is. There's been some dissension in the U.S. men's national team camp. Fans aren't really liking Greg Berhalter, who's their coach.
Okay.
They're actually calling for his firing. But we've seen this time and time again. We have to understand the U.S. men's national team isn't, Brazil. We can't expect them to go out there and win every single game.
Right.
And while we're doing that, other nations are getting better. Like, Canada is getting better. They don't have any other sport besides hockey. So, if you look at it this way, where they are trying to, if you're trying to get a college scholarship to school, although I think their education is free, but still, if you're wanting to play in college, you're probably not going to be skillful enough to play hockey. Soccer is an alternative for you. So they're getting better as a nation. We've seen progression as Canada as a nation. But we're supposed to be the superior powerhouse. Right now there's a mini nations tournament going on in our region. And USA, they came out and they spanked Cuba a couple days ago, 7-0. So it looked like everything was on the up and up. And yesterday they just couldn't do anything. Ugh. I think what the tipping point is that they did, Greg Berhalter subbed out Christian Pulisic when it was tied 0-0.
That doesn't sound like a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's where kind of a bad Pulisic, you could tell, was completely upset. He was yelling at his coach on the bench, like, why are you taking me out?
Yeah, he's one of the best players in the country.
Yeah.
Right? He's the best player on the team.
I would say he is the best player on the team, and he's one of the ones to watch if you look at young player, like young under 25 players in the world. He'd make that list of ones to watch.
Okay, gotcha. So, yeah, that is a bad.
It's a bad. I mean, I know it's not mainstream bad. Everyone's like, it's U.S. soccer. What are we going to do? But it's not a good look when any team has this kind of dissension going on.
Yeah, I got you. All right, what is the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is this little fact nugget that I came across that I can't really wrap my head around.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe I need your help. This is a stat. Bruce Allen's winning percentage with the Redskins is .364. Okay?
Right.
I mean, we know he's just an interim coach. The fact nugget comes through this. If Bill Belichick lost his remaining 10 games this season, then went 0-16 for the next 23 years, he would still have a better winning percentage than Bruce Allen does right now.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm having I'm having issues really trying to rationalize that. Roughly, that's the next 378 games Bill Belichick could lose and still have a better winning percentage than Bruce Allen right now.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing.
I mean,
that's one of those cool mathematical statistics.
Yeah. I think it's more of a dumb on me because I can't wrap my head around it. I'm trying.
Yeah, that's really, really amazing.
I mean, that's how successful, how great of a coach he has been and how much of an the Patriots organization what he created has done. I know there's, if you ask Boston people, they're going to say all the success is due to Tom Brady.
Well, I don't know if everyone will. I think there's a camp that's split. I think they realize because like that Super Bowl was exactly a Bill Belichick Super Bowl.
Right. This definitely is a chicken and egg conversation.
Sure.
Because I don't think you can have one without the other.
Yeah, I don't either. I think
Belichick may have had a successful team, but I don't know if he's this successful winning this many Super Bowls or having this type of two-decade dynasty if he didn't have Tom Brady, and vice versa.
You know what's amazing about this? Remember how he got the job in the first place? He was in New England with Parcells and liked it. And then Parcells left on the next day after their Super Bowl with the Packers for the Jets, took Belichick with him, then was going to step down and, of being head coach, and Belichick was supposed to be the new head coach of the Jets, and he didn't want to be the head coach of the Jets. He wanted to be the head coach of the Patriots. And the Patriots ended up basically trading for him. I don't forget what they gave up for him, but they ended up giving it so he could go back to New England where he liked the organization. He almost was a Jets coach.
Yeah.
Like, think about that.
Yeah. Jets are probably a little upset.
Probably.
A little bummed.
But it's
but again, you know, they may not
have. It's one of the greatest acquisitions in NFL history.
Yeah. I mean, it's just funny. I mean, because, you know, he was coach of Cleveland. Cleveland could have kept him. Actually, Baltimore would have been the team that had him, but
I mean, what do we equate this in other sports? I mean, like Greg Popovich? I mean, like being consistently good with San Antonio and every now and then winning a title, but this is different.
I think that's probably the closest because, you know, like Belichick, Popovich has only had like one or two guys during the entire time. I mean, I know that.
Yeah, and he's been the head coach here since like the late 90s.
Yeah, you can say that he had three when he, you know, especially when he had Duncan, Tony Parker, and Mono Ginobili. But I don't think those other two, I think it was more Duncan.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of tough.
It's really amazing.
It's really tough to kind of put your finger on, like, who do we compare him to? Because, I mean, it's almost like he's in a class of his own.
You can't even compare him to, like, Nick Saban in Alabama. Because by the time Saban got to Alabama, he had already won three Super Bowls with the Patriots. I mean, it's amazing. It's unbelievable what he's done. And again, this league is not, it's not supposed to be like this.
Domination. We're coming up on 20
years.
Think
about all of the people and all of the teams that tried to copy that in some way, right? Well, we don't have Brady, but can we do something with our personnel like he does with his personnel? Can we create an atmosphere where there's a, it's a Patriot way, but with our organization, right? Where we don't take any sort of crap from anybody, that kind of, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work across the board. A lot of it is because you have Brady. I mean, no doubt. Absolutely. But they can't even recreate the atmosphere with their team that Belichick has with the Patriots. And maybe because you just can't do it with a snap of your fingers, you sort of have to build it. You sort of have to let it grow on its own to a point where you have it. You can't just step in and have it. Maybe that's the case. But the idea that stars have gone there, and some have worked and some have haven't, but they all have to toe the line or they can't play there. It doesn't matter who you are.
Yep.
They all have to toe the line. And those who can toe the line can't play there. And those who do can be stars there. And all these other teams can't replicate that. They try, but they can't. That's amazing. That is a fascinating statistic the more I think about it.
I know.
That is really fascinating.
If he lost his next 378 games.
God. How many years was that again?
23 plus.
That's incredible.
It's the remaining 10 games in this season, and then the go 0 for 16 for the next 23 years.
God, that's like, what, 2042?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he would quit by then. He probably would have been fired. No one can lose that many games in a row.
Well, he might be in the ground 23 years from now.
That's
I don't know
true.
How old he is.
Yeah.
But it's still.
Rest in peace, Belichick.
God, that's incredible. That's really incredible. What a legacy. All right, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can do so at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. One more thought on the Major League Baseball Game 4 tonight in New York next on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is the first time nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as that was released, so we are bringing the tunes of the bands that may get into Cleveland, Ohio. This is Soundgarden. This is a good band. They were a good band. They had some good songs. It was part of the whole Seattle sound.
Now, this makes sense for them because it has to be about 25 years after their first commercial album, right?
I would think so.
And they're all part of that Seattle grunge rock music.
Right.
This makes sense for these guys to be first ballot nominees.
I agree. This is a good first-time nominee. And I hope they get in. They were a good band.
Yeah.
They were a good band.
Pat Benatar makes no sense.
Pat Benatar, though. Man, God, I can't believe she's a first-time nominee. She should already be in, have a plaque already in there.
Already have a bust. What do they do?
I don't know.
Is it a plaque? Is it a bust?
I don't know. I don't really know. That's interesting.
Does your teacher go if she gets in?
I hope so. If she does, I got to find her. Now my job is to find her. It seems easier in 2019, but now I'm going to be a stalker.
You'll find her.
I should try. Okay, if it rains in New York today, hear me out, Ron. If it rains, there is a 100% chance of rain.
Okay, so if it rains in New York with 100% chance.
All right, Rob Manfred has already said, listen, we'll call this thing early. I don't care. If it rains in the morning and we know it's going to rain all day, we're not going to make anybody go out there for the night game. We'll move it to Thursday. But they're not moving the series. They're not shifting everything. The game 4 will be Thursday. Game 5 will be Friday. The teams will all fly Saturday back to Houston for Saturday and Sunday. There's no, there's not going to be a push in this series. So hear me out on this. So let's say Wednesday gets moved and you can start Zach Greinke. And this is just the Astros. You start Zach Greinke in game 4. That would be on Thursday. Game 5, you could go back to Verlander. Game 6, you could go to Gerrit Cole. If somehow the Yankees got to game 7 on Sunday, what do you do? Do you bring Verlander in for 2 days rest? Do you let Cole pitch an inning with 1 day's rest? Do you bring Zach? You don't put Jose Aquiti on the mound, do you, in a game 7? What do you do if you're the Astros? If things stay the way they are now and they have a game tonight and it does go to game 7, you'd have Gerrit Cole on the mound for Sunday.
But I almost feel this scenario favors the Astros.
Yeah, you might be right.